You're listening to KTOO here with local and statewide news. The Juneau School District Board of Education appears to maintain its concerns about state funding as it moves through the budget process for the next fiscal year. Board President Dee Dee Sorensen appeared troubled by some assumptions the budget is based on at a Thursday budget work session. The proposed budget depends on a $400 increase in per-student spending from the state.
I want to feel confident that if it's a big zero, that we have planned our contingencies based on how we can weather it without making everybody's lives a total misery for an entire school year.
Superintendent Frank Hauser says that if the state doesn't raise its per student contribution, the budget would fall about $1 million short. That is after factoring in adjustments and what's projected to be in the fund balance.
And that leaves $1 million left over. That could be addressed through the year through whether we look at what the vacancy factor looks like, maybe holding back on some spending. It would be easier to absorb a $1 million difference throughout the span of a whole year so we could do budget revisions to address what that would look like.
The budget discussion is happening as a bill to increase the per pupil funding formula by $1,000 is expected to go onto the House floor for debate on Monday. District administrators said at the work session that the proposed budget that assumes the state will increase funding by $400 per student includes about $1.3 million in unallocated funds. That's about $350,000 above the minimum the district needs to maintain. Several board members requested a list of items that funding could be used for before its next meeting. The board is scheduled to hold a final hearing on the budget on Tuesday. Today, Juneau residents joined thousands of protesters in more than 30 cities as part of a nationwide rally calling for an end to President Trump's scientific research funding cuts and firings at federal science institutions. KTOO's Alex Solomon has more.
Defend science, not defund! Defend science, not defund! Defend science, not defund!
A small crowd of about 20 protesters clad in raincoats chant in front of the marble pillars of Juneau's Capitol building. They wave homemade signs in the drizzly afternoon to support scientists and their role in society. It's the latest local protest against Trump's motions to shrink the federal workforce and cut funding for scientific research.
Hands off NOAA! Hands off NOAA! Hands off NOAA! Hands off NOAA!
Droplets of rain collect on McKenna Lovejoy's nose as she shouts. She says science saved her life.
I have a chronic condition, and without the insane work that doctors put in to protect people and save people, I wouldn't be here.
Lovejoy is calling for Alaska's delegation in Congress to defend their constituents against Trump's attacks on science, instead of supporting him. She arranged the protest, and that's something she's never done before. But Lovejoy felt called to action when she saw national organizers asking volunteers to host Stand Up for Science demonstrations in their communities. The activists demand the nation's leaders end the political censorship of science, secure scientific funding, and reinstate DEI initiatives. Christy Kissinger-Totten is involved with the Democratic Caucus for Alaska. She's here to oppose Trump's efforts to defund scientific research.
This is what saves people. I had a brother that had polio, so it's close to our family, and we need to you know, promote vaccination and promote the facts of science. Keep it funded, keep it in our schools.
Jill Dumansil totes a sign that reads, Stand Up for Science. She's the president of the University of Alaska Faculty Union and showed up in support of her colleagues, some of whom have had research grants canceled.
They are working to solve real-world problems and big problems that people have. So targeting them is ridiculous.
Ray Chester Immel III is here to champion the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. He's an avid skier and a former schoolteacher and says that Alaskans count on NOAA's accurate and timely weather reports.
You need an infrastructure of science, data recording, and reporting. Is there an earthquake and a tsunami? You need to move to higher ground. Who's going to tell you to do that? You know, those warnings are no good a few hours too late.
After chants and a personal testimony, protesters chatted amongst themselves until some of them had to go back to work. In Juneau, I'm Alex Solomon.
And anglers will be able to fish for king salmon at a popular slough near Petersburg this summer, despite low projected returns. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game made the announcement yesterday. Similar low numbers last year triggered the closure of Blind Slough's freshwater fishery, but this summer it will still be open to Alaskans. That's because of a recent decision by the Alaska Board of Fisheries in Ketchikan. KFSK's Hannah Floor reports.
Jeff Rice is the state sport fish biologist for Petersburg and Wrangell. He says the Board of Fisheries changed a lot about how Blind Slough's hatchery king salmon will be managed.
Well, it wasn't just a change to a management plan. It was like a rewrite of the management plan. So there's a lot here over time that'll play out one way or the other. But I think overall, there's some solid pieces here, and I look forward to seeing how it works.
The king salmon swim 2 miles up Blind Slough through rapids to return to Crystal Lake Hatchery on Petersburg's Mitkoff Island. It's about 17 miles south of town. Each year, the hatchery needs a specific number of returning salmon, or broodstock, to raise new fish. Last year's freshwater closure was meant to ensure enough broodstock made it to the hatchery. But while freshwater sport fishing for kings was closed last year, resident and non-resident anglers were still allowed to fish the saltwater at the mouth of the slough, initially taking up to 4 fish per day. That frustrated some local fishermen who saw it as inequitable. They said the management plan favored tourists from out of state who stayed at lodges and fished for kings in the nearby saltwater. It also limited fishing to people with boats. After the Alaska Department of Fish and Game announced the closure last year, several groups came together to draft a series of proposals for a new management plan. And last month, the Board of Fisheries voted to adopt many of those ideas at their regional meeting in Ketchikan. Rice says the new plan favors residents over non-residents at every tier of projected returns. He says he was a little surprised that the Board of Fisheries went for a plan that weighted allocation in favor of residents.
The board was happy to adopt this and really pressed toward the idea of a resident preference being important. All the people who worked on this were residents, so they consider that a win. If you're a non-resident, and I'm hearing from several of them calling me now, they're not so happy about this.
Alaskans won't be able to fish all the freshwater of Blind Slough this year. The management plan creates a sort of preserve in the upstream part of the slough where the shallow water sometimes heats up, making survival tough for king salmon. The plan also reduces bag limits when projected returns are low. Where last year, saltwater fishermen, locals and tourists, were allowed to take 4 king salmon per day at the start of the season, this year's anglers are only allowed 1 per day, regardless of where it's caught in the terminal harvest area. And the annual limit for tourists is just 2 fish. Rice says it's notable that fishermen drafted a proposal that reduces the number of fish they can harvest.
I think they prefer that over not being able to fish at all. In the end, what we're offering people is opportunity to go fishing.
When projected returns are higher, bag limits will be higher than in the past. Rice says anytime there's a big management change, it takes a few years to be able to assess the results. He says it remains to be seen whether the new plan strikes the right balance between prioritizing broodstock and giving anglers the chance to fish. In Petersburg, I'm Hannah Floor.
And there's a nearly 50-50 chance that the Alaska Permanent Fund won't have enough spendable money to pay dividends and the state's bill at least once over the next decade. At least, that is, unless lawmakers change the structure of the fund to function more like a university endowment. That's the key takeaway from a presentation permanent fund leaders and the legislature's chief budget analyst gave to lawmakers this week. Permanent Fund Corporation CEO Devin Mitchell told lawmakers on Tuesday that the issue is not with the $80-plus billion permanent fund itself. Mitchell says the problem is with the fund's 2-account structure.
We want to ensure that there's an ability to provide a payment to the state of Alaska each and every year. We don't want to have a 46% probability of failure. We don't want to have any probability of failure for this revenue stream at this point.
The permanent fund is separated into 2 accounts. There's the nearly $60 billion so-called principal, which can't be spent without a vote of the people. And then there's the so-called earnings reserve account, which has about $9 billion in spendable money. Legislators could spend every last dollar of that by a simple majority vote. Lawmakers have drawn 5% of the fund's value every year to fund state services since oil prices crashed in the mid-2010s. And today, the permanent fund provides more than half of the state's general purpose revenue. It's the largest overall funding source for the state outside of the federal government. Now, lawmakers are considering a constitutional amendment that would combine the two accounts into one. Legislative budget analysts say that would solve the problem. The amendment would also constitutionally cap the draw at 5%, creating what the Permanent Funds Board Chair describes as, quote, predictability and sustainability for the fund going forward. Senator Bert Stedman, a Sitka Republican, says the amendment would also prevent lawmakers from spending billions of dollars from the fund when they face a deficit.
The little piggies in the trough are getting hungry in this building, so let's not, you know, overlook the benefit of the endowment concept in restricting the ability of appropriations over if it's a 5% or 4.5%, whatever we set that limit at.
The Permanent Funds Board has been pushing to combine the accounts for decades. Last year, they published a rare analysis paper illustrating the importance of the concept. Combining the accounts and capping the draw is broadly popular among senators in both the largely Democratic majority and the all-Republican minority, though there is some debate about whether 5% is the right amount to draw every year. Placing a constitutional amendment on the ballot for voters takes a two-thirds majority in the House and Senate. The governor would not be able to veto it. And taking a look at the weather, it's currently raining here in Juneau. And taking a look at the weather going into this weekend and next week, we've got a chance of rain and snow. And looking at the weather tonight, we've got a low of 37 going into a high of 38 on Saturday. Thank you for listening. This is KTOO.